here we are, a new episode of Wrestling is Everything, is Wrestling Podcast, part of the Multimedia Men brand. Catch us on iTunes, catch us on Stitcher Radio. You can subscribe to us, tell us how much you love us, tell us how much you want us to jump off that top rope onto you, elbow style. I'm Brian Kluger with BoomstickComics.com. We are here today to talk about Wrestle Kingdom number 11 from Japan. I am joined by the amazing, the incredible, the magnificent Tom Nix in San Antonio, the WrestleMaster. What's up?
You could have snuck in at least one more adjective there.
The devilishly handsome?
Effervescent. Let's go with effervescent.
Omnipresent.
Even better. Okay. Is that a fat joke?
No. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very well. I just watched some of the best wrestling of my entire life, so I'm doing great.
And we're going to get to that. And we're also joined by our amazing, our fresh-smelling, our legendary, the king, Tyler Major, part of Flow Sports.
Yes, I'm here. Not much, man. I'm kind of like Tom. I just watched some of the best wrestling I've ever seen in my entire life, and I couldn't stop watching, and I can't stop talking about it. So I'm really excited to talk about
it. And I'm glad you're both here so we can talk about Wrestle Kingdom number 11 from New Japan Pro Wrestling. But before we do that, Tyler, you work with Flow Sports and Flow Slam. Can you tell our audience, if they have not heard this podcast or not know about, what Flow Sports does?
Yeah, so Flow Sports as a parent company is a kind of an online media platform that is designed to directly compete with cable television and specifically cable sports. We offer an alternative solution to people who are looking to watch maybe sports that aren't covered as well or as frequently as maybe some of the top cable providers cover them. So, you know, stuff like swimming, amateur wrestling, track and field. You know, there's a lot of track and field events that happen throughout the year that don't get covered. And one of our newest, we have a bunch of sports. I think we have like 20 different verticals, and each one is something unique. And just recently, we started Flow Slam. Some people know us, some people don't. But what Flow Slam is exactly what Flow Sports brings, and we're doing that with pro wrestling. And basically, for something like $20 a month and $150 a year, I think, you get access to right now all of WWN's or most of WWN's catalog, which is Evolve Wrestling, Shine Wrestling, Full Impact Pro. A bunch of other stuff. They're even starting a new promotion entirely created around tournaments called Style Battle, and which is an offshoot from Evolve. And in fact, this weekend, if you sign up, this weekend you'll be able to get to see the first ever Style Battle promotional event. I believe that's taking place tomorrow, and there's some huge independent names such as Sammy Guevara, my man. Fred Yehi, I think Darby Allin's in there too. And I think it's going to be really cool. What Flow Slam's doing is really awesome stuff. I'm not directly involved with Flow Slam, but I am I'm an editor, and I edit documentaries for Flow Sports in general. And it's I basically create additional content for people in addition to the live events that they get. They will usually get about one documentary a month per vertical on – it's usually an athlete spotlight, an event spotlight, something like that. And so I'm currently working on Flow Slam's first documentary, so I'm really happy about that.
Well, cool, man. Yeah, go check that out. Go check out Flow Sports. Sign up.
And I'm not just going to say this because Tyler's our guest, but I am a member of Flow Slam, and it's awesome. If you are a fan of wrestling – please consider signing up. I know the $20 a month might seem daunting, but with the amount of content they already have, the quality of the streaming, the quality and the quantity of the back catalog you can get, there really isn't much better bang for your buck when it comes to the world of independent wrestling than Flow Slam. And if you have the money, plunk down for the $150 because you get everything you would get normally, but it costs you something like $12.50 a month if you break down your $150. So not much more than what, you know, a New Japan Pro World or a WWE Network would give you, but you have access to, you know, 8, 9, 10 different independent wrestling shows all over the country, and they're all so awesome.
Yeah,
so
please consider
signing up for Flow Slam.
They do wrestling, but they also do just every other sport imaginable too. So if you're into basketball, football, like the Olympic wrestling, I mean, they have it. So
yeah.
So
one of our big, just to give you guys an idea, our fighting sports are really up on the upswing. So, you know, we have a grappling option, which is purely jiu-jitsu, no gi and gi. And then we also have a combat section, which is more MMA, boxing, kickboxing, stuff like that. And they're just growing every day. And Flow Slam's only going to get better as time progresses. So what we're doing is trying to change the game, and I think we will eventually.
Well, good. I'm glad we have you here. And I'm glad we're going to talk about Wrestle Kingdom number 11. It is just you guys got me into indie wrestling last year in 2016, and it changed my life. I'm going to an indie wrestling show tomorrow called Soar Professional Wrestling.
You are awesome.
Ron Simmons is going to be there, and it's going to be badass. Keith Lee's going to be there. I'm excited to go. So you got me into this, but. And I guess the New Japan Pro Wrestling takes place in Japan, and Wrestle Kingdom, as what I understand it from somebody who's new to it, is that the very first week of the year, New Japan Pro Wrestling puts on, like, their version of WrestleMania, and it starts out the year, right? Am I correct?
Yes. Yep, that is correct. And usually it's the culmination of at least half, but if not all, of 2016 storylines. So everything that is happening in 2016 usually culminates at the beginning of 2017 to then kick off the next year, which will then culminate in 2018 and so on and so forth.
Right. So this happened, was it yesterday or the day before in Japan?
Oh, gosh.
January 4th.
It was during the week, which was weird.
Yeah, so it took place at the Tokyo Dome, and the card was insane. And I think I've been reading a bunch of people on Twitter, a bunch of wrestlers, and us three, that this was probably the best pay-per-view and a couple of the best matches we have ever seen, not to mention the best matches we will probably see all year, WrestleMania included, Evolve included, anything included. So we're gonna run down some of these highlights and really just tell you why you should watch indie wrestling and watch these wrestling superstars, because they are that badass. But Let's start with the first match of the night, which was a New Japan Rumble, with the first entrant was one of our favorites here on the show, Big Mike, Michael Elgin.
Yeah. So Tyler and I are going to see him next week.
I interviewed him at VIP when y'all came to Dallas.
He's a large man.
And he throws people around like it's nothing.
So what makes this – there were so many crazy people in this. Like, you had the old school Billy Gunn from WWF. You had Bone Soldier, Cheeseburger, Hiro Sato, Justin
– Tenzan.
Huh?
Tenzan. The New Japan Rumble is their version of, like, the Royal Rumble. But it's typically not as big of a deal. Like, you don't – there's nothing you get for winning it. It's usually a way for either people who have been hurt for a long time to come back in and showcase themselves, or brand new talent that haven't had a chance to showcase themselves. And a lot of it's also comedy-based. And it's also a way for them to get the legendary Japanese wrestlers a spot on the card, get a quick payday, get the crowd really involved because the crowd reactions are always really great. So you got like Jushin Thunder Liger showing up, Tiger Mask, the fourth, I think, right, Tom?
Yeah,
it's the fourth,
right,
Tiger Mask?
Fourth,
yeah. Scott Norton. Fucking Scott Norton,
I could not believe Scott Norton showed up, but he did.
And it was great, and it was almost worth – I mean, the match itself was kind of whatever, but it was almost – it's almost worth it just to watch Big Mike and Scott Norton stare down.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's not much else to say about the Rumble. Like, it's fun for what it is. It's kind of a good mix of like you said, like new wrestlers and also that thing that the WWF – back before, I think they stopped doing this when they became E, but it was that thing that they used to do at some WrestleManias where they would have like a Legends Battle Royal, and it was like Sergeant Slaughter and Jimmy and Superfly Snuka and the Iron Sheik and all that stuff. You do see a lot of legendary Japanese wrestlers as well as some legendary Gaijin wrestlers come back. I remember, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, even like Haku showed up to one of these. Like, you never really know who they're going to dig out of the ground to come be in a New Japan Rumble. But, like, it's pretty fun. It's not it's not of any huge consequence. And this year it was nice because the very first person who entered, Michael Elgin, ended up winning. Somehow Cheeseburger was the last person to be eliminated, which I still don't understand.
I want you to explain, I want you to explain to everybody who Cheeseburger is.
Okay, imagine James Ellsworth, make him skinnier and black, and you basically.
But he can actually wrestle though. Cheeseburger can wrestle. He's just tiny.
He's a tiny, tiny, tiny man. But he's a current Ring of Honor wrestler. If you go to almost any Ring of Honor live event, you will almost definitely see Cheeseburger there. He's very fun, but he's mostly a comedy wrestler. But to Tyler's point, He actually can wrestle. It was just very strange to see Cheeseburger and Michael Elgin show down. That was a very strange thing to see.
How good does Billy Gunn look at like 53?
How good does Billy Gunn look, or how good do steroids look?
Yeah, he's definitely juicing, man. There's no way he looks that good when he's 53, man. That dude is juicing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was a fun match. But
yeah,
I mean,
it's a great starter match. It gets everybody really excited, and it's funny and it's entertaining.
But it is the match is officially part of the pre-show. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not actually on the Wrestle Kingdom card. It's just we do this every year before the actual first match starts. So it's a good warm up, especially if you're new to New Japan Pro Wrestling. The Japanese love multi-man matches. So normally tag matches, but this is just a good – you're going to see a whole bunch of dudes wrestling at the same time match. I think there's only like 15 people in it, 20 maybe?
Yeah, 15 to 20. There's not that many people in it. And it's 14, quick too.
14 this time.
Okay.
Yeah, 14, yeah. And it's quick. Like I don't think – what is the time in the Royal Rumble? It's like a minute and a half, right? Every minute and a half?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. This, I think it's like every minute. So it's like really fast. It's, you know.
Yeah, this only lasts, I think, like 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of these Rumbles don't go over half an hour. Like I said, it's just a fun pre-show for the crowd to see people they haven't seen in years or use it as a spotlight to show off some of their new people. Sometimes a young boy. A young boy is kind of like a wrestler in training. They might be in a couple of these. Or they just have their some of their lower card people. Like in this case, this is where Bone Soldier will show up, a.k.a. or F.K.A. Captain New Japan.
Captain fucking New Japan.
Captain fucking New Japan.
But we're excited that Mike Elgin beat everybody because we've seen him on the smaller circuits, and it's just great that he was the first out. He won the Rumble. It's just I'm so glad about that. So I wonder if that means he is going to like be moving up the card here.
Well, he was already up. He was already up on the card anyway. He just got injured. He broke his eye socket, I think. Yeah, he broke
his orbital bone.
Yeah, and so this was
Austin Aries problem.
Yes, exactly. Which apparently is a problem that's going around lately. This is a way for them to reintroduce him, basically say, hey, he's not on the card, but – and I think he was a surprise entrant. I don't think anybody knew he was going to be in the Rumble. Yeah, so I think it was just – and there's some news regarding Elgin, but we'll get to that at the end of going over this because it would be a spoiler, I guess, to talk about it right now. So,
but yes, Brian, you are correct. He is moving up the card.
Yeah, and we'll talk about how.
Yeah, it's great. And why do we still have Billy Gunn wrestling? Even though he's like 102, he still looks good, but I don't know why.
Actually, here's the reason why. He got fired from WWE for doing steroids.
Right.
Because he was doing – I think he was doing weightlifting competitions at the time. And instead of just like disappearing into obscurity, he went and did some freelance dates. And then for whatever reason, I wasn't aware that he ever wrestled in Japan, and maybe he never did. I don't know. But New Japan brought him in to be a tag team partner in their tag team World Cup, or their tag team championship tournament, basically. Yep. And he tagged with Yoshitatsu, I think. And and Yoshitatsu is notoriously kind of like he's a guy that's trying to get over, but he's just not being successful at all. So I think if they thought if they put a high profile gaijin with him, that maybe that would push them a little bit. They didn't end up doing very well in the tag team tournament anyway. But that's why Billy Gunn is in New Japan right now. I don't know how long he'll be there, but
yeah, poor Yoshitatsu.
Yeah,
well, he had like such a great. Well, you know, like the dude got his neck broken by AJ Styles, like legitimately got his neck broken by AJ Styles, and then decided he was going to come back, and then he came back, and everyone's like, "Yeah, we don't care. We don't care." We don't care that you almost died. Just please stop wrestling.
So, all right. So what about – let's move on to what do y'all think about the Beretta-Rocky Romero-Young Bucks match for the
– Yo, are we really going to skip over Kota Ibushi versus ACH wearing tiger masks?
I is that what – you want to go
with that? That's what it was. Dude – So the match that had the two dudes with the tiger masks, Tiger Mask W was Kota Ibushi and Tiger the Dark was ACH, who are two very, very famous freelance wrestlers. And the match isn't that noteworthy. The match is kind of whatever.
No, it was like 7 minutes long. It was
but it's funny.
It was super doofy.
It's funny because the internet was abuzz about, oh my God, is Kota going to come out and confront somebody? Is he back? You know, if Omega wins, is Kota going to come out and challenge him? And it's what's funny about all that is none of that happened. Spoiler alert, none of that happened. However, Kota did wrestle and hardly anybody knew about it. So I thought that was really funny.
And ACH is awesome. I saw ACH right up close at Wrestle Circus and it was amazing.
Yeah, totally. So it's a solid little match to promote their anime show that they've got going on.
Yeah, I mean, like, literally, this is almost like to put this in WWE terms, it's basically if they had, like, Dean Ambrose and Shinsuke Nakamura wear masks and wrestle on a pre-show to Battleground. Like, that's exactly what this is.
just to fuck with people.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
That's good. All right, so what about the tag team match for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship with Beretta, Rocky Romero, and the Young Bucks?
Pongy.
Man, I thought this match was actually sneaky good. I thought it was really good. Beretta took a hell of a bump. He missed a
– He just jumped out of the ring.
Yeah, he missed a tope con hilo or something and just like flew and kept flying. And back bumped himself out of the match. And then it was basically Rocky versus the Young Bucks. And man, Rocky looked amazing. That is some of the best Rocky stuff I've seen in a long time. And he really pulled it all out. And I mean, Beretta was great until then, but I think that was kind of the story that they were trying to tell, is RPG Vice, you know, trying to overcome the Young Bucks, because the Young Bucks felt fresh the entire time. Like, I never really saw them winded. And then of course, you know, Rocky gets the surprise win. And I thought as rushed as that was, it still worked.
Yeah, it's a fun tag team match, and I really like Roppongi Vice generally. And the nice thing about this, and one of the nice things about this Wrestle Kingdom in general over a lot of Wrestle Kingdoms, is normally when you look at a New Japan Pro undercard, it is predominantly multi-man matches. Like, you're going to have, like, you know, tons of tags, or even in this case with the junior tag team championships. So actually, before we go on, let's kind of go over some of the titles in New Japan Pro Wrestling, because they have it's a little bit different.
Oh yeah, there's a bunch.
Than,
yeah,
than how they set up with a WWE. So they have three, I guess. Yes, they have it. They have a juniors division, which is basically like the cruiserweights, but taken seriously. So you have junior wrestlers, and there's junior tags, and then there's the junior heavyweight champion. Then you also have the Never series of belts,
which is open, yeah.
Which is open weight, so it doesn't matter. Like, you could be 350 pounds and compete for it. You could be 155 pounds and compete for it. And then there's a Never open weight champion, and there's also a trios title called the Never Trios Championship. Then you have the actual heavyweight category, which is IWGP Tag Champions and the IWGP Intercontinental and the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. So there are a ton of titles, but in New Japan, with the exception of the Never belts, they keep their juniors completely separate from the heavyweights.
You graduate.
Right. Except for sometimes you'll see some juniors mix it up with heavyweights during like tag matches that don't really mean anything, but like they're very strictly delegated to be in their own division. So at Wrestle Kingdom 11, and this is why I think a lot of people are saying this is one of the best top to bottom cards they've ever seen out of Japan, is if you go through this card, most of the matches are either one tag team versus one tag team, or it's a one-on-one match, which you do not see often at all. Like, the last 3 or 4 years of Wrestle Kingdoms, every single one of them has had a fatal four-way tag team match for the junior belts. So instead of one team versus one team, it's one team versus one team versus one team versus one team. So you've got eight guys competing.
And it's just spots the whole time.
Which is fun.
Yeah.
And it's great. But this is the first time in a long time where you just had, hey, we're the best tag team in the world, and we're going to fight the second best tag team in the world and see who comes out on top. That's a really refreshing thing to see for a Wrestle Kingdom, because normally they do not do that. So, like, this was a good match. It was a fun match. But what I really liked about this whole show is they really kept the multi-man matches to a minimum. I actually think the only multi-man match that there was the entire night were the two other tag team matches. They actually had like three people involved, or three teams involved with that. But Yeah, but this was an excellent match, and Trent, you're crazy for jumping on nothing.
I have to point out, if you guys get a chance, you should go online. I don't know if he kept the tweets up, but Chuck Taylor was drunk on whiskey and live tweeted this match, and it was pretty amazing. It was pretty amazing. Because Chuck Taylor is an independent wrestler who's amazing. He's great. And he is in sometimes a tag team with Trent Beretta called the Best Friends. And right. And so he was basically like berating Beretta the entire time for making dumb mistakes. It was really good. It was as entertaining as the match for sure.
It is I want to watch this instead of I want to watch this instead of the Royal Rumble again. I will watch this. Oh my god! But we'll move on. And we mentioned earlier, or we've talked about Ricochet and Willow Spray, but the Gauntlet match, the 6-man tag team championship for what we just discussed, the never open weight division. What do you think of this match?
I thought it was a match that started off awesome, and then once it got down to the final two teams, I thought it was a really poor choice of two final teams that they chose. And basically, the match started off with, I believe, Bullet Club and Chaos started the match, and Bullet Club consisted of Bad Luck Fale, I think Adam Hangman Page, and Yojiro Takahashi. That team in general is, I think, pretty solid. I'm a pretty big fan. I don't like Takahashi. He's the only guy out of that group I don't like. And they went up against Chaos, who was comprised of Jado, who's a older wrestler famous for his tag team stuff with Gedo and all kinds of stuff. And Jado, just so you're aware, Brian, Jado is also the co-head booker of New Japan with Gedo.
Gedo run that joint.
Yeah, and so Chaos comprised of Jado, Will Ospreay, and Yoshihashi, who, sidebar, Yoshihashi is fucking awesome. Bullet Club and Chaos started off, and I thought what was really great about this start off, the starting them off, is I thought Adam, Hangman Page, and Will Ospreay got a lot of exposure during this match, and I thought they both looked really, really good. And I think Ospreay especially looked really solid. Everything was really clean. Everything chained together really well. He had the speed. It looks like he's beefed up a little bit. It also looks like he's not being a complete lunatic in the ring. And he's a bit more careful with his spots and what he's choosing to do. And he's a little bit more deliberate in his choices. I don't know about that fucking hair though. that hair is questionable, but I thought the match overall was good. I'm surprised they held off the Ricochet Ospreay showdown, to be honest. I'm really surprised they held that off. I'm thinking they'll probably build that for an actual Wrestle Kingdom match or something at some point. But I thought overall the match was fine. I was happy that LIJ won because I think LIJ is awesome. But, overall I thought it was just kind of fine. It was really good, and then it kind of just tapered off towards the end.
Yeah, of the three teams in this match, the people who are in LIJ are by far the most interesting and best wrestlers they had in that match. I mean – Ospreay is awesome and Yoshihashi is awesome, but there always seemed to be like one weak link in each team, except for the LIJ team, who were just all awesome.
What do you guys think of? I have a question for you guys, because I'm very unfamiliar with some of these wrestlers. You know, I've only just started watching New Japan pretty regularly in the past, 6 months. I watched last year's Wrestle Kingdom, but then I didn't watch anything until around G1, and then after that I started watching a little bit more regularly. But what do you guys think of Sonata? I think Sonata has the look, the talent. I love his character. He's a little slow in the ring, but I think like that dude has it, and I'm wondering if he's bound for bigger things.
I love the Cold Skull. I think Sonata is the shit. His fucking mohawk is awesome. His moves are awesome. His jacket is awesome.
Dude, yeah, he's jacked.
No, I
dude is ripped.
Yeah, I like Sonata. I like Sonata a lot. And he was a relatively new addition. I think he debuted at the company not even 6 or 7 months ago. Like, he came out and helped helped Naito win the belt the first time, and then he's kind of been part of the stable with them ever since. But no, I like Sonata a lot. I love his mask that he wears in the ring.
Oh, just, yes.
Everything about his look is a great decision.
Brian, I'm kind of curious because LIJ kind of reminds me of old, like, and not old school WWF stuff, but like late 90s Attitude Era weird stable shit.
Yes.
What do you think, like, from your perspective as somebody who's primarily watching WWE, what did you think of kind of LIJ and like how they present themselves?
Oh no, they bring back that old nostalgia type of thing. They're just like the crazier, or like they're, you just never know what they're gonna do, and like they're not predictable. So I really like that in them. If that answers that.
Yeah. What do you think of Evil specifically? Because Evil is the only guy that is really like an actual character that's like not playing a version of himself. So like I'm always curious about what people think about Evil.
He is great. He kind of reminds me of like a very flamboyant rhino.
Okay. I could buy that. A satanic rhino. I could get behind that.
Satanic and flamboyant. But I like him. If you were to put them in WWE, I think they would go up really well against the New Day.
I would love an LIJ New Day face-off.
Because New Day wouldn't know what to do.
Well, because I feel like LIJ is New Japan's kind of version of the Wyatt family, I guess. I mean, sort of, in that they're like weird. And they don't give a shit, and they don't care about anything. And they're basically chaotic people who just want to watch the world burn. And so I think that would be interesting, mainly because like New Day would cut a promo and Sonata would just stare them down and then probably walk out of the ring.
How long do you think they'll be? Cause they, you said Sonata only got to New Japan recently, but he was in TNA. And so they're probably here for a while. They're not going to show up on anything else.
No, I think you might see him. The LIJ crew usually only other shows up, like the only other place they show up is CMLL. I think they, Tom, do you know if they've showed up in ROH besides Naito yet?
Yes, I want to say
Bushi. I feel like Bushi would have showed up there.
I think Bushi and Evil showed up in Ring of Honor as part of like a tag team or a trios match against someone, and they've definitely also showed up in what was it? There was also a who is it? It's coming to me. Revolution Pro Wrestling. Has a couple crossover events every year where they bring some New Japan people in, and they came there as well. So they have been in some American and UK promotions, but they're like once, twice a year.
Yeah. Hopefully they get a little bit more exposure. It'd be cool to see them a little bit more often. Plus, LIJ is probably the most popular stable in Japan. So.
I'm sure we'll discuss that when we get to Tetsuya Naito's match.
Yeah. But oh my god.
They're crazy over. Over. I just want to give a quick shout out to Bushi, who's amazing. He's a Japanese.
Bushi's also awesome. Dude, I love the mask to reveal another mask. I'm always a mark for that, man. It's so goofy, but I love it.
Yep. And I'm also a mark for anyone who spits mist.
Oh yeah,
yeah. You got to bring the mist to Jiri thing. But moving on, should we talk about Cody and Juice Robinson?
Sure. I think it's noteworthy.
Okay. So, especially singles match, nothing really on the line, less than 10 minutes.
Yeah, I thought it was solid. You know, like, I thought it was – I thought Juice was better than Cody. I thought Cody was – I don't know if he was nervous or if he didn't quite know how far to go, if he wasn't given a whole lot of time. He was fine. I mean, he did fine. Like, it was totally average. It just didn't – nothing that he did made me be like, man, I got to watch Cody in New Japan.
Correct.
You know, nothing he did, like, made me think, man, I have to tune in every single time Cody's in New Japan because maybe he's going to do something different than he does in America. He wrestled the exact same way he's been wrestling on the indies, which is a super safe, kind of WWE style, which is fine. But I thought Juice was just really making Cody look a lot better than he actually was. And Juice, I thought, was really – this was probably the most I've been impressed with Juice from a selling and in-ring psychology perspective for a long time.
So do you think Cody Rhodes will ever come back to WWE? Or do you think he's going to move his way up to the top of New Japan?
Oh, I think eventually he'll go back. Yeah. I mean, it just depends on timing. It depends on money. It depends on creative. But, I mean, he's got a good run going on right now without them. He doesn't need them at the moment. But, I mean, I'd be surprised if we don't see him back there within the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Okay. And Juice Robinson is FKA CJ Parker from NXT. And he has hit such a – I don't even think Juice Robinson thought that he would be as high on the card as he's getting to be on the card. Like the last year he has been like he was Tanahashi's tag team partner in the
tag team tournament. Yeah.
The World Tag League, which, again, we'll get to Tanahashi later, but basically he is the biggest star in New Japan Pro Wrestling, period. Like the most popular guy. And the fact that he handpicked Juice Robinson to be his tag team partner is crazy. And like I said, he had a good showing with Cody. He didn't just get squashed. I mean, it wasn't a long match, and he definitely was defeated pretty soundly. Like it's not like he like lost via a roll up and like could have won, but he did a really good showing. And like Tyler said, like this was probably the most I've ever liked him in the ring in terms of a character and selling. And he really came across as the underdog who will fight and fight and fight and not give up. And it was a good little character for him. And yeah, like Cody's announcement video for being the new member of Bullet Club was so cool. And this would be the first time that he really was going to play an honest to God heel on the indies. And I'm kind of with Tyler, like it was a fine match, but I didn't see anything about Cody Rhodes being in Bullet Club that set him apart from anyone else, just a regular heel. You know, I think he had an opportunity to really throw on a mean streak, to really throw on something that will make people remember him. And instead it was just a fine match that no one didn't like, but it didn't really establish the American Nightmare as a force to be reckoned with.
He didn't live up to the gimmick that he had created. Like there was nothing American Nightmare about that match.
Yeah. All right. Anything about Adam Cole versus Kyle O'Reilly?
Adam Cole, baby!
Kyle O'Reilly kind of look like a country bumpkin Daniel Bryan?
Well, I mean, that's not too far off of a comparison, to be honest. I think Kyle O'Reilly's really good. He's really good, and I thought this match actually didn't showcase it at all. I thought this match showcased why Adam Cole is so fucking good. These two have had some barn burners in the past. Like, Adam Cole has knocked out – or Kyle O'Reilly has knocked out Adam Cole's teeth, like front two teeth.
In real life. Yeah.
And so I thought for a 10-minute match this was awesome, but I don't think it should have been 10 minutes. I thought it should have been a 20-minute trying to kill each other match. And I think that its placement on the card is strange, if only because it's the ROH World Championship and it's in the middle of the card for 10 minutes. And it just kind of like – it just doesn't feel right.
This is the interesting thing about the New Japan Pro Wrestling versus, and Ring of Honor partnership, because they do have a very solid friendship as promotions where the New Japan wrestlers will show up in Ring of Honor relatively frequently. And then obviously on certain events like Dominion and this, they will also allow the Ring of Honor belt to be defended in New Japan Pro Wrestling. But it really kind of gives you a sense, like when you watch Ring of Honor and they have the New Japan guys on their show, it's treated as such a huge deal. And the New Japan Pro guys almost always win their matches against the Ring of Honor guys. And then when the Ring of Honor guys go to New Japan, it's kind of treated as like a secondary or tertiary title. And the matches are never terrible, but Tyler said, it's just like, okay, that was a 10-minute championship match for a title that no one cares about. Move on to the next one. Like, it's just very interesting to see how America treats the Japanese wrestlers versus how the Japanese company treats the American wrestlers. It was very interesting.
Yeah, and I think, if anything, it is more telling about the future of Kyle O'Reilly than it is about anything else. Yeah. I think it's pretty safe to say that he's – at the very least going on to bigger and better things from ROH, whether that is a New Japan specific contract or what is more likely NXT. I'm pretty sure we'll see Kyle O'Reilly in NXT possibly at the end of this month.
Yes.
I would say it'd probably be more likely to be in February or March, just because they have so many people they need to start debuting in NXT. So I think we'll see Kyle O'Reilly sooner rather than later in NXT.
Cool. Yeah. And he is really good, but man, he looks like someone that I would have beaten up in high school, except for he would actually kill me.
Yeah, he would. No.
He would actually kill me.
All right. If you get a chance, Brian, you should go look up there is a I can't remember the name of the fight. It was a gimmick match in ROH, though. It was basically the last match between the two, because these two used to be in a tag team called Future Shock. And at some point that broke down, and they had basically equivalent to a last man standing or, you know, like give up only match between the two of them. And they – Adam Cole delivers the hardest super kick I've ever heard in my entire life.
Wow.
You should look it up on YouTube.
Okay.
It's like O'Reilly's head snaps back, and I think he was legit knocked out. It's amazing. And their feud deserved, I think, better than a 10-minute match. But
okay.
Yeah.
I'll check it out.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the three-way tag team match for the tag team championship?
I think we could just talk about it briefly. I thought the match overall was fine. I kind of hate the decision. I don't really like Toru Yano. I think he's kind of a joke, and I think for him to hold the belts kind of weird with Ishii. I think that's so stupid because Ishii's amazing.
It's a weird pairing, but at the same time, New Japan Pro Wrestling does do. Like, I don't think they do a lot of odd couple pairings. Like, it's not a common thing. And this could work out in the long run because, like, Yano really did. I mean, kind of realistically, Yano won the belts for his team. Like,
oh, yeah, Ishii, he did.
Like, I mean, Ishii did the lariat, but, like, Yano did the little low blow thing to actually get them the win. So like as big of a joke as he is, and he is kind of a joke there, he's the reason why they have the belts. Like, he wasn't just useless, you know what I mean?
That's true. Maybe
there's a story to tell. I mean, like, maybe Toru Yano over the next like 8 months will lose some weight and become like a brawler because his best friend's Ishii.
Well, did you know he used to be a legit wrestler?
No,
like apparently he used to be like a really good wrestler, and then he did comedy for a little bit. This is what I read this somewhere. He did comedy for a little bit and realized he just liked doing comedy. So he kept doing comedy.
Awesome.
But I have a theory, and I think it's so that Ishii can take a break. If he's in tag team matches, then and he still has a belt, then that's good. It'll keep him happy. But also, he can take a break for a little bit. He doesn't have to, you know, work himself into a frenzy like he has been. I think the most interesting part of this match has nothing to do with the actual wrestling and everything to do with the talking in the ring. Yeah. Tongaroa has the filthiest mouth I've ever heard in the ring.
We're going to see them next week.
We are. That's right.
They're going up against the Killer Elite Squad. And one of my favorite things in wrestling now is Tongaroa telling his opponents to eat shit before he hits them with the powerbomb.
You know he has a minor in criminal justice?
No.
Oh my god, that makes it even better. Did you know that they're the sons of Haku?
Haku.
Yeah. That's crazy.
That's great.
I think they're like second cousins to like The Rock or something.
Well, everybody's a second cousin of The Rock.
The Rock, Tyler.
All right, moving on to the four amazing events. The four amazing events, the Junior Heavyweight Championship between Takahashi and Kushida. Wow.
Dude. This is a cruiserweight match. This is how you do cruiserweight matches.
I think we're gonna. I think these next four matches is just gonna be us saying, "Dear WWE, this is how you do X match."
Yeah, pretty much. Man, I tell you what, man. I recently rewatched today. I rewatched all four of these final matches just to refresh myself. This and the next match are the two that improved dramatically on the second watch, specifically this Takahashi Kushida match, because in the beginning of the match, Takahashi almost botches that sunset flip powerbomb the very beginning, but I keep remembering, like, if he had nailed that, that would have been one of the spots of the night if he had got it to work correctly. Now, at the beginning, it's kind of a sloppy match. You really don't know. It's hard to tell kind of where it's going to go, what's going on, but somewhere it just clicks, and I think it's where Kushida grabs him in midair with the armbar. As soon as that happens, that match is completely different. It takes on a completely different meaning. It is just amazing. It's so good. On the edge of my seat the whole time. It was so good. I had no idea who was going to win.
No, that's the same with all the rest of these matches. But Kushida is like, if Okada is the ace of the heavyweight division, Kushida is the ace of the junior.
Absolutely, yeah. He's the final boss. He's the final boss for sure.
Yeah, Kushida is just freaking amazing. And I'm happy the title changed hands because I like LIJ. I like Takahashi. Like, he was built up as a huge deal. Like, he had that whole Y2J countdown thing where they said there was
the time bomb
was going to go off, and like no one knew who the time bomb was going to be. Like, people thought maybe it was going to be a debuting American wrestler, or maybe it was the return of Minoru Suzuki, who's been off in NOAH for 2 years. And then it turns out that it was Kamitachi under his real name. And he's been so weird and so great ever since.
He has the best shit-eating grin in the ring of anybody in New Japan. And it is – every time he does it, I'm like, dude, you get it. You get wrestling. Like, you understand what you're doing, and you're really good at it. So I think this match, I think I originally, like, rated it, like, a 4-star out of 5. I would definitely give it another quarter star and call it a 4.25 match, because I thought – it was everything that a cruiserweight match should be. It was hard hitting. It really hard hitting at some point. Like, there's a moment, I don't know if you guys remember this, where they're trading blows and they basically just hit each other in the ear. Like Takahashi like punches Kushida in the ear, and Kushida just like grabs his ear and then just jacks Takahashi in the face, and he just plops on his ass. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, there
no joke. Go ahead, Brian.
I said there were some of these things in this match were so crazy. Like, when there's just so many times when I thought their necks were going to break by how they fell or how they kicked them so hard. I was like, how are they, their spine not severed?
Oh, no. But like, that's one of my favorite things in the world is two Japanese men just beating the dog shit out of each other with elbows. It is my favorite thing to happen in a ring. So I, and like, it happened a lot
in all of these matches. It happened a lot,
but it's just, it's the most basic stuff. It's just two guys standing there pounding on each other. But like, it's something that only New Japan does right. Like,
yeah,
you see Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, like, they lock up and they start punching each other, but the punches just look weak, and yeah, they're doing it fast and whatever, but like, and sometimes you get the yeah boo stuff in WWE. But it's set up for the effect of the yeah boo stuff. This is just two men hitting each other in the head as hard as they can, and it's the best thing about wrestling.
It's awesome. Yeah, that was an awesome, awesome match. So let's move on to the Never Open Weight Championship between Gato and Shibata.
I've never liked Hirooki Goto more in my life.
Why? Why do you say that?
Well, there is a great story behind this match. Go ahead, Tom. But I want to. There's an amazing storytelling quality.
Well, they went to school together, right?
Maybe. I don't know that part. It's possible. Mm-hmm. But
they are lifelong actual best friends.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, looking at the way this match was wrestled, I would hope so, because otherwise, that's like two strangers just deciding to throw potatoes at one another. But
is that an Irish joke?
No, that's what you do when you go in the ring and you're just dropping bombs. Like, for example, JBL notoriously, like, if you accidentally jacked JBL in the jaw, he would drop the biggest bombs on your head, and those were potatoes. He could just throw sacks of potatoes, man.
Before we get into the story, why I like Goto better than I probably ever had is Hirooki Goto to me is the Dolph Ziggler of New Japan Pro Wrestling. He's a good wrestler who always puts on good matches, but he loses so much that you just forget about him. He never wins a match that means anything. He never stands out beyond, yes, you are a good wrestler and you are good at your job. He's all like, you know, he got to the finals of the G1 and he lost that. And the one year that he won the G1, he didn't win the title, and it was just a completely wasted push because he can't do anything right. This match, and I hope I won't step on Tyler's story because I want him to talk about it, he stepped up his game so much that I wanted him to win, which I've never wanted before.
Shibata's easy to root for because he's a complete badass. He's basically like 100 pounds lighter version of Brock Lesnar. And like, he's a dude that could legit kill somebody in the ring, like, no doubt. And what I liked so much about the match, and this is actually directly going off of what Tom just said, is that Goto's never won the big one. And I thought going into this match, I said, I don't buy Goto winning. I don't buy him. Even if he wins, I don't buy him winning at all. It feels like it makes it feel even more fake than it already is.
Because, like you said, like, when I was going to the match, I was like, if Goto wins, then it's a booking decision. If he wins, then I can, like, I'm seeing through the story, because there's no way he would ever beat Shibata at this type of match. So if he goes over, it's because Gato or Jado want him to be a big thing again, and they're going to try to do it again. And then he surprised the whole world.
Well, and he surprised the whole world by going toe-to-toe with Shibata at his own game.
Yes.
And that's not Goto's game. Like, if you go back and watch any of the G1 matches, I think a few of the G1 matches he went kind of strong style. And even – well, especially with the match with Omega, he did not go strong style. And I think that's what Goto's problem is he's never gone into a match – and this is from a storytelling perspective. He's never gone into a match and said, I'm going to try to match this guy. He never tried to match Omega, so he lost. He's never tried to match Okada or anybody else, and so he loses. However, this is the time where he said, you know what, for every elbow I get from Shibata, I'm going to throw three back just as hard. And that's what won him the match, and that's what made it believable to me that he beat Shibata. And I think in a lot of ways, as good as the next two stories are, this is the sneaky underdog story of the whole show. Because Goto, like, this is the beauty of professional wrestling in this match, because there's no way Goto should have won. No way. And he did, and he made it believable. And by the end, the crowd was cheering for him. At the beginning, the crowd was booing him. By the end, the crowd was cheering. And, you know, I thought that this was just a sneaky good match. Just so, so good. And it's solid for good. 16 minutes, well-paced, just awesome. So awesome.
Yeah,
was so good.
Yeah, that was speaking of as a callback to Chuck Taylor, because Chuck Taylor was tweeting the entire event. I think he called it Whiskey Kingdom. And his tweet during this match was I can't wait to no-show if I'm ever booked against Shibata.
That man is amazing. That man is a national treasure.
It's so good.
Oh God. So I'm a big fan of that match. And by the way, what's really interesting, I thought this was a really good example, this match, and then the following matches as well, obviously, but like this match specifically really highlighted, I don't know if you guys watched this with English or Japanese commentary.
I watched English.
Yeah, I do too. I do like going back to watch the Japanese eventually, though, because Japanese announcers are amazing. But they I don't know what they're saying, but the energy that they have.
But
infectious.
But you don't need to. Like
you don't need
know,
to.
You know what they're saying by how they're saying.
Yeah, and I have something else to add to that later on in the Okada match. But for this particular match, I thought Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino did an amazing job of not just being, you know, like not just being exposition for the audience, like explaining everything to for it, but instead explaining why this is the way it is, and specifically why the never open weight has turned into who is the baddest motherfucker of this area. You know, like who is the baddest motherfucker in Japan? They get a belt. That's straight up what this has turned into. It used to be, I guess, for like more up and coming people, but then once the older guys who started beating the shit out of each other got it, now it's a bunch of older dudes that are proving that they can still go.
Yeah, because hold on a second. Okay, I'm gonna look this up because it really is a let me see if I can find it here.
While he's looking, Brian, like I know that you've probably seen some strong style with like Shinsuke in NXT or something like that. This was like a pretty good example of like a strong style match. What did you think?
Oh man, it was crazy. It was like every hit or kick, I literally cringed and felt it myself.
Yeah. The headbutt spot at the end was so good.
Oh my God. Just freaking obliterate like. So, like, Shibata's whole thing is headbutts. Like, he's actually turned into a wrestling – he's kind of like
– like a meme sort of, yeah.
He's turned into a wrestling meme because there was a match – I forget who it was against. But he legit busted his own head open.
I think it was against Ishii.
I think it was against – which makes sense because Ishii's head is basically concrete.
Yeah.
But he busted his own head open with a headbutt. He had, like, this one like streak of blood that went like around his eye and down his face, and it got turned into a shirt, and it got turned into a bunch of images about how tough Shibata is. So the fact that this match was Goto showing Shibata how you do headbutts, like it was it was awesome. But anyway, so back to my thing here. The Never Overweight Championship was originally made to be like a up and comer title. The N in Never stands for New Blood, and then it's New Blood, Evolution, Valiantly, Eternal, Radical. Japan is weird. You have to be okay with
very
that.
Very weird.
but yeah, over the course of this title's history, it has become more of a, you know, old, like a older veterans, we're just going to beat the dog shit out of each other title. And I'm totally okay with that. And what is interesting, well, we'll talk about it in a little bit, but I'm very interested to see who steps up to challenge Goto, because Shibata basically has announced that he's done with that title. Like, he defended it so much this last year that he's just, I need to take a break from this division. I've done it for a long time. I don't need to do it again.
Even though Ishii has held it like the most out of anybody, I feel like for me, Shibata is the quintessential Never open weight champion. Like, it'll be tough to beat the image of him. Like, I can't imagine anybody besides Shibata having that title.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird for him not to have it. And so I think I'm with you. I'm really curious as to where Goto takes this thing and where New Japan takes this thing, because Shibata's probably going to go – he'll probably take a break for a while because the dude is injured as hell. But if I were Ghetto, I'd throw him immediately into the Intercontinental title scene. But because I think he's at least deserved that. But I think – yeah, man, Goto, I don't know what – because there's nobody aside from Shibata, Ishii, the Goto, you know, like there's a few older guys, you know, Makabe, Nagata, I guess. You know, Evil held it for like, you know, a hot minute there. And I thought that might be a good – that he
about
might be a
week.
Good –
about a week, yeah.
Yeah, he might be a good entrant into that into that. Man, how awesome is Goto's finishing move? It's so simple.
Oh, my God.
It's so awesome. Simple, but it's awesome. It's so cool, man. And that scene where he does it, or that shot where he does it forward, and then Shibata's just like a lifeless body, and then he does it back, and then he does it the right way again. Oh, such good storytelling. Such good storytelling.
Yeah.
Damn.
So just so you know, Wrestle Kingdom 11 was so good that Tyler and I are marking out over Hirooki.
It's that good. Which
we never thought we would do.
True. All right, let's move on. We're well in over an hour right now, so
that's okay.
That's okay. Wrestle Kingdom 11 deserves it.
Yes, it does. So the second to last match was the Intercontinental Championship between Naito and Tanahashi. And I'm trying to think of how you can describe these guys. Like, look-wise.
Well, Tanahashi is the Japanese equivalent of John Cena.
Yes.
Like he basically is, from a popularity standpoint and from a lol Tanahashi wins standpoint, like, that he is John – like, he's the John Cena of New Japan. Like, a dream match for everybody in the world is to have Tanahashi versus John Cena.
There was a great video that came out right before Wrestle Kingdom 10. And last year, the quote-unquote 10th anniversary, like, it showed – it was like we're going to show you the end of every main event in Wrestle Kingdom history, like, from 1 through 10. Like, it showed, like, the very last seconds of the closing match just to be, like, who won the belt and whatever. And, like, Wrestle Kingdoms 5 through 9 – or, sorry, maybe even 4 through 9 were all Tanahashi hitting the hi-fi flow and pinning someone to win the match. Like, it was like six of them, like six out of the 10 matches were headlined by Tanahashi, and he won all of them.
That's great. Yeah. So,
and
go ahead.
And so just so you're like, I don't know how familiar you are with the Intercontinental title, but the way the Intercontinental title is booked is it's sometimes more prestigious than the world heavyweight. It just depends on who's holding it, but it is equivalent to the world heavyweight. Like, I guess to put it in perspective, I think the quintessential Intercontinental Champion is Shinsuke Nakamura.
Correct.
He elevated the title to a distinction, and he held it with such respect is probably the wrong word because of Nakamura's character in Japan. But as far as like he cared about it, he wanted to keep it. He defended it regularly. He won it like 5 times. You know, it's as desirable as the world heavyweight. To just to give everybody some kind of like a perspective of what this match is.
This is not like the U.S. belt or the current IC belt. Even though in its current state, the IC belt is getting prestige back, which is great.
It is,
but it's still definitely a secondary title. This technically is a secondary title, but no one in New Japan treats it as such because of how great Shinsuke Nakamura's reigns were. Like Shinsuke would actively not even go after the world belt because he's like, why do I need the world belt? I have this belt, and because I have it, it means it's the best. So I'm just going to defend it like it's the best. And he got, you know, it was him versus Tanahashi on one of the Wrestle Kingdoms, like on Wrestle Kingdom 8, I think it might have been 7, but either 7 or 8. The actual main event of the show was Tanahashi versus Shinsuke Nakamura for the IC belt, and it actually went on after the world title belt, which at that point was Naito versus Okada.
Yeah. So it's a big deal. This belt's a big deal. And this match is a big deal because Naito and Tanahashi have a really long history. And Tanahashi is considered, again, the John Cena of New Japan. So only he's a better wrestler. the interesting thing about Naito is that he went to Mexico for a little while, and then when he came back, he created LIJ, and he was this weird, like, don't give a fuck guy suddenly. Well, like, his style completely changed.
So let's go even farther back. This is the story of Naito and why he is so popular right now. Basically, Naito is the prototype for what Vince should be doing with Roman Reigns. So Naito was pushed as the successor to Tanahashi. He was the next big thing. He was booked to win every match. He won the G1 Climax tournament in 2011, 2010. And everyone just shit on him because he was a boring, nondescript babyface, and no one could get behind him, and they didn't really care about his moveset, and he didn't really have the charisma that like Tanahashi did or Shinsuke did. And to be fair, no one's gonna have the charisma that Tanahashi and Shinsuke do. So like he was being pushed as the next big thing when people were still really happy to watch all the other guys that were currently there. So then when he won the G1, he got his title match, and that was the year that because fan backlash against him was so bad, the owners of New Japan Pro Wrestling opened up an online poll that said, what match do you want to see main event Wrestle Kingdom? Do you want to see the Intercontinental belt or do you want to see the world belt? And the fans voted they would rather watch the IC belt main event than the world belt. So Naito, who was supposed to be getting a huge push, didn't get the main event Wrestle Kingdom because the fans hated him so much or thought he was boring so much that after that he left to go to CMLL. He learned the Mexican style, and while he was over there, he developed this new persona, which when he came back to New Japan Pro Wrestling, he didn't give a shit about anything. He wouldn't take his shirt off during matches. He would be disinterested during matches. He would just like in the middle of a lockup, just walk away from it. Like he just didn't want to be there. He didn't give a shit about the fans. He was completely disrespectful, and no one could convince him otherwise. And that was the start of this Los Ingobernables, who is a stable in Mexico. That's why they're called Los Ingobernables de Japón or Japón. But that was the start of his character, this great, great heel turn, because the audience rejected him as a white meat babyface. So he came back as a complete asshole And now, over the last 2 years of him doing this character, they're selling more T-shirts than anyone else. LIJ is more popular than anyone else. He was getting cheered over Tanahashi in the main event, or in this match. He has turned his entire career around simply with a well-timed heel turn.
And to put it in even more perspective, he won the heavyweight championship, I think, last year.
Yes.
And, like, destroyed the belt.
Yeah, he like, actually
broke
like,
the belt.
Yeah, broke the belt. Like, you can see it when he came to the ring with the Intercontinental belt. He'll just walk in the ring and throw it. Like, he'll just throw the belt.
He doesn't care.
If it lands outside the ring and gets scuffed, it doesn't matter. He's not there to be a champion. He's there to win his matches, but he doesn't give a shit about the history of the belts. Like you said, like, that's why he comes to the ring in a suit and then makes everybody in the arena, not just his opponent, makes everybody in the arena wait for him to take his suit off so the match can start. And sometimes that will take him 10 minutes to do.
Wow.
This match is amazing,
yeah,
by the way. It's so good.
It's almost as long as a main event at WrestleMania for WWE, and it's not even the main event here, but it's so damn good. But that brings us to the main event. This last match has been by wrestling critics and wrestling fans saying that this was probably the best match they've ever seen. This match went on for more than 45 minutes, and it was between Kazuchika Okada versus Kenny Omega. And I don't even – it's – first of all, Kenny Omega comes out, makes a movie that is verbatim Terminator 2, the very beginning of Terminator 2. In English and in Japanese, it was so great. And he comes out like half Terminator face.
With a shotgun.
And he yep. looks like, in real life, he looks like the shirtless sax guy from the 80s with long hair and just, I don't know. And then you have Okada, who is just... kind of, how do you describe Okada? Just kind of like a pretty boy type of guy?
He's the ace. He is the new ace of New Japan Pro Wrestling. Like he is a very attractive man, but this is a guy who was a young lion a long time ago, went to TNA, no one knew what to do with him. Then he came back and he created, probably with Gato, this Rainmaker gimmick, and he has just been just right at the top of the company ever since. And the guy is 29. He's not even 30 yet. And he's main evented 3 Wrestle Kingdoms. He is one of the best wrestlers in the world, full stop. He's not as flashy as Kenny or Tanahashi, and he's not as arrogant and entertaining as Naito. So people tend to think that he's, like, of the 4 top people, he's kind of the least interesting, but he is legit one of the greatest wrestlers working on the face of the earth.
I think I told you this, Tom. I compare him to, like, Bret Hart.
Yeah,
because
sure.
He's like he's not flashy, but he's really good at what he does. He's amazing at selling. He can go. That dude could wrestle for 3 hours if you let him. He has incredible stamina.
Like,
he regularly competes in 30-minute matches. Like regularly competes in 30-minute matches.
But what was so crazy about this 45-minute match is that they never stopped. They never took a breath. And there were so many false countouts. And, like, they just kept going in, like, crazy spot after crazy spot. They never took a break like you see in WWE where they do a crazy spot and they lay on the ground for 10 minutes. That did not happen here.
No. You've got two supremely conditioned athletes that I'm not even sure if they were supposed to go the 45 minutes. I think they were probably allotted 30, and I just think Kenny said, fuck it, we're just not going to end it. We're going to keep going. And
this is the interesting thing about this match is, despite Okada winning it, this was a Kenny Omega match.
Yes.
From the pacing, from the spots, from who is basically more basically Okada, in a way, put Kenny over, despite not Correct. Giving him the win, because he made Kenny look so good, and he made him look so tough, and he made him look so just, you know, he never gave up. He didn't wrestle this match as a traditional heel. He wrestled it as a heel who wanted so badly to prove to the world that he was as good as Okada and that he could take this company into the next
phase. Yeah. So and that was the storyline, like on the English commentary especially. Obviously I didn't hear the Japanese one, nor would I know what they said even if I was listening to it. But the story of this match was New Japan Pro Wrestling has made it very clear that 2017 is the year they start going after a global audience, meaning they're actually hosting two shows in the United States for the first time ever. They want people in America to subscribe to New Japan Pro World and not just Japanese people. Like, they have their sights set on the first phases of a global platform. And the story of this match was, who leads this company into this bold new era? Is it our undefeatable ace who wins every match and is one of the best wrestlers in the world? Or is it this upstart who basically became a big deal a year ago when AJ Styles left? He made himself from a junior into a heavyweight. He won the G1 Climax. He's been just putting on some of the best matches we've ever seen. He can speak English. He can speak fluent Japanese. Is this the guy that we put our belt on and say, you are the standard bearer in our global era? And that was the meta story happening underneath the actual match story of the main event. And I was completely – and, like, you can see it go either way. Like, Okada is a proven commodity. He's massively popular in Japan. He's amazing in the ring. He has a great charisma about him. He can speak okay English. But then, like I said, you've got Kenny, who is, again, probably one of the best wrestlers in the world, is fluent in both languages. And I think because he is an English speaker, and he's the first gaijin meaning foreigner, to win the G1, and he's the first gaijin to main event the Tokyo Dome, he brought a lot of English-speaking eyes to the product for the first time. So you can completely understand why they would want to put the belt on someone who could actually go to America and Canada and cut a promo in their language and get them to watch the product. So it was a fascinating, fascinating story. But the micro story is that or not micro, but the under that is the fact that Kazuchika Okada has become Tanahashi, and Okada's last three Wrestle Kingdom appearances were all against Tanahashi, and him establishing the fact that he is now the leader of New Japan and Tanahashi isn't, and now he has to defend the belt against someone who's exactly like him 3 years ago. Exactly like him 3 years ago. And that's the story they were telling in this match, is this new guy deserving of the ace spot? And like Tyler said, even though he didn't win, everybody left that match talking about Omega, not Okada.
Yeah, no.
Which is too bad because Okada is so good in the match. But yes, yeah. It is Kenny Omega's match, though, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, Okada is I mean, he got his ass handed to him, and he still kept on and kept on and kicked out of everything. But then you see Omega, and you're like, what can this guy not do?
Right.
And that's probably what he wants you to think, too. That's what he was out to prove.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I know, like I said, there's a lot of people who were upset that Omega didn't win because the wrestling community loves the quote-unquote underdog. They also love the heel. But like we said, this match was almost more about putting Omega over, to the point where, like, this match was built around the one winged angel, which is
yes.
Kenny's finishing move. Like, he'll put you on his shoulders and then he'll kind of like drop you in like a not really a pile
cradle.
Driver.
It's kind of like a cradle
slam. But the whole match was like, if you watch the commentary, they just keep talking about the one winged angel because he's hit it on Okada tons of times in the build up to this thing, and he's pinned him several times.
Nobody has ever kicked out.
Nobody's ever kicked out of it. So it was just the story of if he has one chance to hit this move, and if he hits it, it's over. On the other side, you've got the Rainmaker, Crow's Line, which is also one of the most protected moves in history. And Kenny Omega became the third person in history to kick out of that move. And he didn't just kick out of it. He kicked out of four of them, or three of them.
So, no, four of them. Four of them. Yeah, I counted.
So, and Kenny never hit the One Winged Angel. In 45 minutes, he never hit his finisher once. Because that means that had he done that, had that one thing been different, he would have been champion. And that's why people, when they talk about this is the best match we've ever seen, it's not just about two guys who can wrestle, who do a perfect mix of high spots and technical wrestling. The stories that Gato and Jado write for their wrestlers and how they build upon years and years of storytelling to get to where they are is why New Japan puts on, like, every year. The year kicks off with Wrestle Kingdom, and every year at the end of the year, Wrestle Kingdom matches are either the best or second best matches of the entire year, because they have so much history and so much meaning behind them. And this main event was no different. It 100% told the story of why Kenny Omega is now a main event player.
He is
the main event. You put him ahead of who?
I'd put him ahead of the top four, or five guys in New Japan right now are Naito, Okada, Tanahashi, Omega, and I'd probably throw who am I forgetting?
I think that's it. I think you're the top four.
Four.
I think
I'd put him over. Naito. I'd put him over Naito.
Maybe. I could see that. I think
I'd go Okada, Tanahashi, Naito, or Okada, Tanahashi, Omega, Naito.
Yeah, I think that's fair too. But anyway, I mean, this match now established that Omega is in the main event. He belongs there. And that conceivably on any night, he could beat anyone in the country, or he could beat anyone in the company. So that is – it was just – the match is amazing. The match is perfectly amazing on every conceivable level.
The pacing is outstanding. Like like you were saying earlier, is they never stopped. Something would always lead to something else. And I think a lot of that is Omega. I think this is the kind of match that he wanted to make. I think you know – a lot of this was him. It's as much, you know, Gato and Jado and probably Okada as well. But there are moments where I can see him setting it up, like, in his mind. Like, if you look at the way he's looking around the ring and the way he's, like, setting things up. And subtle MVP of this match are the Young Bucks for saving Omega's ass multiple times. If you pay attention, there's the moonsault, the springboard moonsault.
Oh my god!
The Young Bucks are actually pulling the guardrail as far inward as they can to give him as much air as possible. And also, Nick actually cradles his head for a brief second. And, like, just gives him the slightest nudge away from the railing so that way he doesn't kill himself. And I think that's the – because a lot of people were like, why are the Bucks out here? It makes no sense. And it's like, that's why they were out here, is because because Omega was going to put it all on the line, and they needed – he was basically the spot. They were the spotters for these spots, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they were making sure they didn't kill themselves.
Yeah, and but that's also like – so – Bullet Club has long been basically the new NWO. I mean, that's why they do the Too Sweet and everything like that. And this match, the Young Bucks never actually got involved physically in the match. Like, yes, they would help Kenny, you know, they'd help Kenny up. They might help him get him back in the ring, but they never, like, held.
Interfered.
Yeah, like, they never held down Okada. They never tripped him up. They never, like, hit him when the ref wasn't looking. Like, they... The weird thing about the two main events is that the two stables that are all about disrespect, which are Bullet Club and LIJ, even Naito always wrestles with a shirt on, always, because he hates his opponent and he doesn't want them to have the satisfaction of him getting fully undressed because they're not worthy of his time. He actually took his shirt off of the match, and after he beat Tanahashi, he bowed to him. Like, he actually showed Tanahashi a sign of respect, which he has never done, ever. And the same thing here. Like, the Bucks are pieces of shit in character. Like, they should be super kicking people all the time. But they knew that this match meant more than that. And they were out there to support their friend and help their friend. But they were not there to make anything seem unfair or uneven, which I thought was a great touch to the main event.
Yeah, definitely agree.
I will go out and say it. This is the greatest match I've ever seen. I've never seen a match this good.
No,
well told.
Yeah,
this well paced, with so much surrounding it. There's so much meaning behind it. Can you guys imagine for a second? So take everything that Tom talked about with, like, the history of New Japan and the setup and the build up to this match. Can you imagine if they had put the title on Omega? How big of a deal that would have been.
Yeah.
To put it to, it would have been unbelievable. So, like, as much as everybody's talking about this now, it would be national news if Omega got the belt, because that would be a drastic change in direction for the company. So I never once for a minute thought that Omega was going to win this match. However, he made me believe it.
Correct.
He made me believe it at certain moments.
Yes, yes.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
After that first after he kicked out of the Rainmaker, and then he, like, hit that dragon's – or he hit that standing dragon suplex.
The snap one,
out of nowhere. I was like, oh, shit, he might actually do this.
Well, and those then, knees. The V-triggers were just unbelievable.
Those knees. Oh, my God. No one does knee strikes as well as Kenny Omega.
No, they're amazing because of how fast he goes. He gets so much speed. Jeez. And it's just – it's – like, he looks like he's knocking their socks off. There's one moment in the match, though, where Okada there's this great sequence where Kenny goes for a one-winged angel, and Okada flips out of it, by the way, which is insane. Yes. Completely insane. I've never seen that before. And it ends up turning into a nice chain of events where Okada hits a tombstone, then he hits the Rainmaker, and Kenny kicks out. And the camera cuts to a close-up of Okada, and the moment dawns on him. I'm going to have to hit him 15 more times with this.
Yeah.
And like, it was such perfect storytelling. It's so good.
Yeah. Because Brian hasn't talked much during this whole thing.
Yeah, sorry.
Hey. Brian Kluger.
Yes.
Will you give us your brain's play-by-play when you saw a top rope dragon suplex?
Well, first off, I passed out. And then when I came to, I rewound it and watched it. And I got a boner. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. No, that...
It was just so like the
crazy spots they did, and like how far he flew, and it's just like, what? How is this possible? And how is he not dead?
He got back body dropped out of the ring.
Yeah,
dude, that is what you also call the greatest back body drop of all time.
Yes,
that is what that is. You can't get better than that. He went super high and super far through a table. Almost over the railing.
Yeah, it was.
By the way, that same spot is how I think Rick Rude broke his back.
Oh, jeez.
I think Rick Rude did a similar spot to that in like the early 90s or mid 90s and hit like you see how like there's that padding around the ring, but there's a little lip. Rick Rude smacked his back on that lip, and it like fucked him up for life. And so Kenny did that, but through a table.
Yep.
Ridiculous. No, it's absurd.
Yeah, the high spots in that match were absolutely off the chain crazy.
Yeah.
And the psychology of the match was off the chain crazy. Like you said, it was it's very possibly the greatest match ever. I've ever seen. And WrestleMania is a piece of shit.
Already.
So there was a rumor going around the dirt sheets today that key members of the creative team watched Wrestle Kingdom 11 because they like wrestling. And now it is a priority in the company to make the main event of WrestleMania as good as that match, which is not possible.
So what's the main event at WrestleMania? Kevin Owens and who?
I'm trying to think that in my head because they don't – the only person on their roster that they have
is capable of doing that
is AJ Styles.
AJ Styles.
And they have no one else. There is not a single other wrestler that could do that match with AJ Styles and make it as good.
No,
he could not. Absolutely not.
I think AJ Styles could have taken pre-knee surgery Seth Rollins and did a 5-star match at WrestleMania. Post-knee surgery Seth Rollins, no fucking way. No way. He doesn't move as fast as he used to. AJ Styles though could do that. I don't know who he would do it with other than Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah, the only way you do it is if you call up Shinsuke, which is never going to happen that soon, they could pull it off if they let Sami Zayn win the Rumble and let him challenge AJ instead of Kevin at WrestleMania, you could do it.
I think so too. I think Sami would be the only other one that could maybe pull something off. I will also say maybe Samoa Joe.
Yeah, that's true.
There's only a handful of guys, and the problem is none of them are in the position to put on that kind of match. They've not been built to put in that kind of match yet.
Well, and the environment in that company is not to put on that type of match.
First of all, it wouldn't be 45 minutes. Second of all, half the spots in that thing wouldn't be possible. There was like 15 tombstones. There was like, you know, they did a dragon suplex off the top rope. There was a moonsault. You don't see moonsaults except for in tag team matches at WrestleMania anymore. It's, to be fair, it's a – and this is something I want to talk about very briefly in a second – as to why this feels the way it does, why this particular event feels the way it does to people, and why people are talking about it the way they are. But it's a different kind of wrestling. New Japan Pro Wrestling is a different kind of wrestling than WWE. WWE is its own thing, its own style. New Japan Wrestling is sport wrestling. It's sport wrestling that's predetermined.
Right.
Yeah.
WWE is sports entertainment. It is purely entertainment. It's more about who's going to run in, who can we get for this particular spot? How many distractions can there be before somebody overcomes the odds?
Yeah.
New Japan Pro Wrestling is about who is the fucking best. That's how they're built. That's how all of these feuds are built. They're built like fights. All of these fights feel like fights. They don't feel like matches I'm watching randomly. I feel this way. I don't watch UFC very often, but I get that same feeling when I'm watching UFC. I'm watching fights. I'm watching two dudes that are beating the shit out of each other. That's how this New Japan stuff works.
Oh, yeah.
They build them like fights.
If you book Shibata versus Ishii, it does not feel like you're watching pro wrestling. It feels like you're watching two men trying to murder each other.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that if WWE was to take anything out of it, this is how you sell that way. Because Vince is trying to do that with some of the stuff in WWE. Anything with Brock Lesnar is built up like a UFC match, as it should be. It should be. However, it almost always fails to deliver, and they're just not doing it the right way. It feels forced because it's the only thing that's being built that way. It feels like it's like Brock Lesnar doesn't even feel like he's in the same world anymore as anybody else. And as a result, it's very inconsistent. And also their presentation is wrong. Everything is wrong as far as what they're trying to do.
And take a look at the tag title scene for the last year. You have some of the greatest teams, the New Day are awesome wrestlers. Sheamus and Cesaro, awesome. And the Club really are awesome. They've been booked like shit. But the reason they're booked badly is because the end goal of the tag team scene on Raw was not put on good matches and build the tag team division. It was keep the belt on the New Day until they break Demolition's record, and then they can lose the belt.
And then we have a talking point for 5 months. Like, that's all
right,
it's
so,
for.
So, because there's like an internal reason or a political reason to do something for a long time, as opposed to just let's do something that works and makes everyone look better, which is why you had so many distraction finishes and so many bullshit countouts. And like, you lose interest in the product when they don't give you a reason to care about it. And the storytelling part of WWE is where most of the shortcomings are, is they have extremely talented wrestlers that can put on great matches, but they don't give them a long enough story arc or they have to be like, you know, well, you could beat this guy, but really want Roman to be the guy, or we really want the New Day to still be the champions, or we really want this guy to be over and not you at this time. So it's more like a WWE making – well, I mean, really, I guess the best way to put it is that New Japan Pro Wrestling is fake sports that please a Japanese audience generally,
yeah.
And WWE is fake sport that pleases Vince McMahon.
Correct.
And that's it.
I agree to that. To end this 97-minute podcast, our longest yet, you just get off your ass and watch New Japan Pro Wrestling, especially this Wrestle Kingdom. It's unbelievable.
Now, not all New Japan pay-per-views are like this.
No.
These guys can't do this every event. Like there's a reason why they have multi-man tag matches, and it's because it gives guys chances to rest. Like, we probably won't see Kenny for a while. Okada probably won't have a singles match until the next pay-per-view, and even then it'll be, you know, not anything crazy.
Close to this. No.
Yeah.
They're all good. Like,
yes.
New Japan Pro Wrestling is a great promotion, but this is their biggest show of the year. And nothing you see the rest of the year will be this good. Now, will you still have five-star matches? Of course, because the G1 Climax is amazing. Dominion's going to be a big deal. They have like their SummerSlam and their Royal Rumble of types of matches or types of shows that they are going to that they're going to put it all on the line. But if you're going to watch weekly or bi-monthly, you're going to see a lot of six-man tag matches and a lot of eight-man tag matches and a lot of stuff that you're like, why am I – this okay? It's fine. But like you said, like it's giving their key guys a break so that when they need to pull out a five-star match at Dominion for the title, they're going to, because they've been well-rested, and those multi-man matches help tell the little micro story of like, oh, you know, this guy – happened to pin the champion in a six-man tag match. And in Japan, that means something. It's not just like, oh, she pinned the champion, that means she'll maybe get a title shot if we feel like she's marketable enough. Like, if they pin the champion, they get a title shot, or they have a series of matches to earn the title shot after that, because wins and losses do actually mean something in Japan.
Yes, they do.
Are you going to watch next time, Brian?
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Yes, I'm sold.
The next event is I think it's a new beginning in Osaka, or it might be a new
beginning. Yeah, I think it's in February.
It is in February.
Yeah.
So that'll be the next event, and like, it's going to be good. You're going to see good matches, but don't expect Okada Omega at the New Beginning.
No, they probably won't even see each other for another 6 months. So
no, we'll see. This was a great jumping on point for fans of wrestling that maybe haven't given New Japan a shot or maybe heard about how good it is, but just haven't kind of pulled the trigger on it. This is back to front, a good event. And the last four matches are four of the best matches you'll see all year.
Yeah. It's so good. Well, that concludes our Wrestling is Everything is Wrestling podcast. I want to thank Tyler. Thanks for coming on, and Tom for just giving everybody all the knowledge they need, the 411 for this brand and this pay-per-view.
Thank you for having me. I always enjoy this stuff, so
it's
thanks.
So good. And we will definitely be coming back next week, hopefully, with some new wrestling stuff from SOAR. And next week from the indie stuff y'all are going to. And, of course, Royal Rumble's coming up. So we'll
and
be
Evolve.
Back with all of that. And Evolve. And Evolve. And NXT. Jesus. There's just so much.
So much.
So much. There's so much wrestling.
So, yeah, we'll be back. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. We thank you a lot. And we'll be back very shortly.
Eat shit!